Episode 1251, My Strength is My Story with Nick Craig, Leading from Purpose.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a stop
sign, watching people. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an incredible gentleman. His name is Nick Craig, and you're going to want to listen to the entire thing because all the way at the very end, there's a caution, a warning label, and you're going to want to hear about it. It comes from Brené Brown. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Nick's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and to sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Today's episode is brought to you by Health, Hope, and Inspiration with Reverend Percy McRae, created by Cancer Treatment Centers of America to provide cancer care information and resources to the faith-based community. Health, Hope, and Inspiration designs each program and every resource to enhance health, convey hope, and inspire confidence. You can tune in weekly by subscribing to the podcast at healthhopeandinspiration.com. Well, Nick is full of information. His brand new book, Leading from Purpose, is going to light a fire within you. It lit one within me. And we talk about everything from parenting to Jiffy peanut butter, and we even include Ben and Jerry's ice cream. It is a blast. It's going to hit your heart, and it's also going to attack the mind. So get ready. Without further ado, let's welcome in Nick Craig, Leading from Purpose. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today is my favorite day. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an incredible leading man when it comes to leadership and authenticity. It's all about leading from your purpose. Nick Craig is a husband to Jeannie of 2 years and is the father to his 3 beautiful girls and 1 boy. He is a president of Cord Leadership Institute, a global firm committed to inspiring people to discover their purpose and equipping them to lead authentically. Nick collaborated with Professor Bill George at Harvard Business School, which led them to co-authoring Finding Your True North, a personal guide, which became the course book for the Harvard Business School MBA class, Authentic Leadership Development. Through Nick's expertise in the area of leadership purpose, he has worked with corporates and academic organizations, including Ben & Jerry's, Yum Yum, Heineken, ING Bank, Lego, Unilever, and the United States Military Academy at West Point. And now he is the author of his brand new book, Leading from Purpose, Clarity and the Confidence to Act When It Matters Most. Welcome, my friend. Sir, I'm so excited to have you here.
It's so great to be here. Thank you.
Well, we have a time to really understand who we are. And you have put in over 25 years of leading edge work when it comes to leadership, authenticity, and purpose.
So I've spent a long time doing this. And it's funny because as I sit here, we have this conversation, it wasn't the plan to be doing this. So in some ways, you know, in 2006, I was working with Bill, as you mentioned, and we were doing work on authentic leadership, and we were trying to unpack what does it really mean to be an authentic leader, not just at work, but in all parts of our life. And that was a really important piece of work that we did. And we realized that one of the things that we needed to cover was purpose, but it was kind of like a stepchild to all the other really exciting parts that we wanted to play with. But what was interesting is the world got in the way. So in 2007, I got asked to run a program for one of the Fortune 10 companies out there with lots of hubris. And I said, well, we'd like these 3 things and we also want purpose. And I was like, no, you don't want purpose. Of all the things you want, I don't think you want purpose. And I was like, the last thing I want to do is take a bunch of really serious corporate people and have to do purpose. So we worked with them from 2007 to 2010. And their stock goes from 56 to 6.
Yikes.
And so they go from being on the top of the world to having no idea where the bottom is. Mm-hmm. And we start to have some of the people who'd done some of the earlier versions of the program come back. And the participants would say, so of all the stuff you learned, what was the most useful thing? And they would say, oh, that's easy, purpose. At the time, I was like, what are you talking about? And it turns out that I had a guy, an example with this. I had a guy who, he says, listen, I've been running this business for 5 years, and most of it I was able to give people stock options and bonuses for doing all the crazy stuff I asked them to do. And that was the solid ground I stood on. And in 2008, it was all gone. Everything, including, I didn't know if we were going to actually sell the business or keep this business. We didn't know what we were going to do. And I realized the only solid ground I had to stand on was my purpose. He said, my purpose is to be the whitewater raft guy that safely gets you to the other side. Now, having worked with this guy, that where that came from was earlier in his life, one of his greatest passions was whitewater rafting. And he was actually a professional whitewater raft guy. And he actually saved people's lives because basically they trusted him, he trusted them, vice versa, and he got them across the other side. So he stood on that as he talked to this group of individuals. And they kept the business, they turned the business around, and he was basically standing in front of them in 2010 saying, if it wasn't for my purpose, I would have nothing to stand on. So in some ways, that my opportunity for us to talk with you today and talk with those listening is to purpose I've discovered is the only thing that we really have that doesn't change, that will always be there, that is the solid ground that we need in such great times of uncertainty that we now deal with. I don't know about you, but I open up the newspaper every day, and it's just like, really? I mean, you know, you couldn't make, you know, if somebody said, what do you think would be the craziest thing you put in the newspaper tomorrow? If I were to write it down in the last couple of years, I'd be wrong, because it was much more interesting when I opened the newspaper. But increased uncertainty means what do we stand on? Okay. And how do we then lead in all parts of our life in a way that is an expression of what is it that we really feel is honors who we are, as opposed to simply chasing after the last text message that we got from our kids or from our colleagues?
It's really enlightening, because I do believe, Nick, that we as a society we've really moved away from this whole idea of who we are. Things are moving so much faster, and not because they really are moving faster. It's just that, like you said, we can open up anything. Everything's readily available to us, this immediate gratification, and we lose our purpose. We lose that identity, yet we're standing here going, we should be more in tune with ourselves because we have so many advancements, but we're actually falling further behind.
And so I think, you know, the truth is that I think that the amount of uncertainty that we live in today. So if I were to ask this question of you and the people listening 10 years ago, if I said, were things more uncertain and less uncertain in the past? People would say, well, you just get a combination. They would say, well, 5 years from now, do you think things will be more certain? Because things are uncertain, more uncertain now, going to the future. And so it really becomes an interesting question as to, so where do you find solid ground? What is that thing that you can say, here's what I'm going to plan around? And for me, what I've found from all the 75 people who I've interviewed, who I've worked with them for over 5 or 10 years, is that purpose is the one thing that had the biggest impact of helping them make the hard choices and decisions when all there was that was facing them was uncertainty. So the example I'll give you, you mentioned Ben and Jerry's. So I'll give you the CEO Ben and Jerry's guy. So when I meet him in 2011, he's about 18 months into what's supposed to be a 24-month turnaround. He's supposed to turn around and leave. And he was doing great, and they were promising him a promotion that would be two levels, would be the six-figure raise and all the stock options, move to London, and sort of ascend to heaven after 24 years of chasing after this bump. And so we work on his purpose. And his purpose is to thrive in ambiguity and chaos for things that really matter. Now, that's a really edgy purpose. What that purpose means is that he's the happiest in the storm. And one of his stories is of his son being in a little boat in a lake in which it turns over in May, and he can't see him, and where is he? And he's really calm, calls the Coast Guard. They don't have a boat in, so it takes them forever. They find his son strapped to a buoy in Lake Champlain, having hyperthermia. And he's fine. Everything was fine. But he was the one who was calm while everybody else was losing it until after everything was done. Then he got the shakes. And he's got this crazy purpose. And what he realized was is that if he took the promotion, he would be in a job where he'd be managing other people who would be doing what he wanted to do. So he turned it down and has spent the last 8 years as CEO of Ben & Jerry's. Now, I was with him and the top team about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I asked him, I said, look, if he had left, what would you guys have done? Now, these are people who had worked with Ben & Jerry's originally. So they've been there. They're like 20 to 25 year veterans. They said, you know, we were all planning to leave. But when he decided to stay, we all tore up all the acceptance letters and all the resume things we had. And we said, okay, finally we got somebody who we love and he loves us. And the result of which has been a whole set of activities they do, social activism activities, flavors. It's one of the few brands that still has its mojo. So a couple years ago, they did the Black Lives Matter flavor. And Ben calls my friend Jostein, the CEO, and says, you out-bend me, which is the ultimate acknowledgement. So that's, you know, in some ways, purpose helped him know the choice he needed to make, where there was no data that was going to actually let him know that it was the right choice.
Mm. Yeah, because you write in your book, you talk in there about choose the hard right over the easy wrong.
Yes. So the hard right, so that's an interesting chapter for me. So that phrase comes from West Point, and that phrase comes from the cadet prayer at West Point. And I got to do programs at West Point for some of the faculty for 2 or 3 years. What the side note, which is really interesting, is that we did it for these faculty, and then the spouses called me and said, no, you don't understand. They don't need it. We need it because we're the ones who, when they were on the tour of duty, we'd get the phone calls, and we didn't know if it was the call that we didn't want or it was them talking.
Yeah.
So we did a program for the spouses as well, which actually was more powerful than doing it for those who were on deployments. But when you do a program in which it's about purpose and people have made a choice of a career where they make less money than other people equally skilled, and they have a very high likelihood that something really difficult will happen, they will be in battle, and some of them didn't have arms and legs, and they all had friends who died, you really realize the power and the importance of purpose. So the hard right versus easy wrong. That in some ways is one of the bigger challenges that we all have, is how do we make the choices that when we look back at them, we knew that it was the hard right choice. The easy wrong is always so tempting.
It is tempting, and I think it's even more so in today's world. We want the immediate gratification. That usually goes into the, well, I can have this right now, so I'm going that direction.
Yeah, and so I think if I look at what purpose really does for us, is purpose is always pushing us to step into the bigger possibility of what does it mean to be who we are. So it would probably be helpful to talk about what is purpose, because we've been sort of mentioning it, but it's not clear. Because I think I've seen so many different definitions of purpose, from take all your values and mission together, and that's your purpose, to if you're good at it, people like it, they want to pay you a lot of money, and it makes a difference in the world, and that's your purpose. I'm like, man, if you got that going, you don't need purpose. I mean, that's what you have. It's when you have that and then don't have that you really find what purpose is nobody wants you to do it. You're not sure you're good at it, but you got to do it anyway. And in some ways, you know, for me, purpose is that unique gift that each of us bring to our life in our world. And we all have something that we bring that no one else brings. Most of us haven't identified clearly what it is. If I think of the question that probably clarifies this, is if I took you and me and I took us both, or anyone listening, I said, like, I take us all out of our lives, and I replace us with people who are equally as talented and good looking and whatever as we are. So there's not a loss from a capability of, like, you know, can you get things done, and are you intelligent and smart and bright and all those things. And we interviewed everyone around that person and said, what do you most miss? The answer to that question is your purpose. And the challenge is most of us don't know what it is. Einstein had a quote that's associated with him, which is, everyone is a genius. But if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will spend its whole life thinking that it's stupid. The reality for most of us is that the world gives us trees to climb. And they evaluate us, and they codify us, and they certify us. And in some ways, the challenge is we don't actually ever know whether we really should be climbing the tree or not. I have a lot of people who are world-class at climbing trees, who when I finally get to them, they're like, you know, I got a secret I got to tell you, which is I hate trees. I'm just really good at it. So people keep having me climb this damn tree all the time. But I would love to know what I'm really supposed to be. What's the real gift I'm supposed to give, and how should I give it? So that's, I think, the challenge for all of us, especially in a world that is overzealous in communicating what it thinks that we should be up to. Question becomes is, where are we? You know, who are you? You're the result of what you read, what you see on the internet, what TV you watch, the people you hang out with, the school you went to, where you grew up. But there is nothing unique about any of those things if by themselves. Question then becomes is, what is your unique way of looking at that and how you apply that? That's your purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's really strong, Nick. Because in your book you write, and it grabbed me. It says, if you can be fired from it or retire from it, it's not your purpose. And, you know, we're all caught up in accolades and, oh, I'm climbing the corporate ladder. And maybe we've removed a little bit of the loyalty out because people change jobs so often more than back in the olden days, even when I was younger and seeing my parents and my grandparents and what they did. But I do believe we kind of say that our purpose is what we do. Like, if someone was to ask me, well, what's your purpose in life? To raise my 5 children, because I'm a mom and they need me. But that's not necessarily my purpose.
That's a strategy by which you live your purpose. Now, how you raise your 5 kids will be unique. So think about this. I don't know about you, but having been around a lot of parents and a lot of kids, is there any one of them that are the same?
No.
No. I mean, you know, as much as you'd like your kids to be all the same, God help you, they will not fit in that box.
Right.
And the same thing is true for us as parents, is that I don't think any one of us has ever parented exactly the same as someone else. There's a unique way. And our kids know what our – I was with my girls this weekend, and they had a whole set of stories about sort of what they get from me that they don't get from their mom or any of the other adults around. And I'm like, really? Oh, okay. So you start to see what that gift is and how you express it with them. The beauty of this is – if you don't know it, you can't live it. And if you're not living from it, you can't lead from it. Mm-hmm. Now, leading is, for me, is sort of a loaded phrase. People think that being a leader or a leader means that you have to have a title and you have to have a whole bunch of people reporting to you. And that's a wonderful 19th, 20th century definition of leading, right? Today's world is, you know, for me, leading is really about if you are... whatever you're up to, other people are with you, and the consequence of the decisions you make impacts them, you're leading. In any context. It could include which restaurant you go to. Okay, but the point is that you're always leading. And in some sense for me, this is when you look at the world of uncertainty. If things were certain, you don't need anybody to lead. Managing will work fine. If there's lots of uncertainty and there's nothing that's going to tell you what you really need to do. The only thing left for you to do and me to do is to lead. But the question is, are you leading from where? Leading from what you read in the New York Times or in People magazine? Or from what is it that you know in the deepest sense of who you are is the choice you have to make? So one example I have, and this gets from the Hard Right versus Easy Wrong chapter. I've got a guy named Everett Spang. So Everett was the aide-de-camp. He was the aide to Petraeus during the Iraq surge. Okay. Now, you usually get that job just before you go from being a colonel to being a general. It's the ultimate sort of, I mean, It's the ultimate job where you get to see what it's like to work with a five-star general. You get to see the whole thing. And it's like, it's the fine finesse. It's like finishing things off. But his purpose had a different path for him. And he decided that being a general was mostly about politics and paperwork. And what he really wanted to do was to go back to West Point and work for the cadets and help them learn how to become good leaders. So he basically went back to get a PhD. And as he's going through getting his PhD, he's wondering whether he made the biggest mistake in his life. Because he's off the track. And all his friends said, you really screwed up. I mean, this is the stupidest thing you could have ever done, because there's only one or two slots at West Point. It's a lot more slots for being a general. And he's escorting a colleague of his who's blind at the Boston Marathon. It's April 15th, 2013. So for those of us in Boston, that always makes you tear up a little bit. And he was crossing the line when the first bomb went off. And then the second goes off. As everybody's running away, he runs toward the people who've been horribly injured and puts a tourniquet, takes his shirt off and ties up one man's leg and stops him from bleeding out. And then proceeds to do the same thing with two or three others. And working with the EMTs and everybody, and he is right in there. He actually escorts a woman who was going into shock to the hospital to make sure she was okay. Six families were impacted by the actions he took that day. So a year later, he got what's called the Soldier's Medal, which is the highest honor you can get for a non-combatant event as a soldier. And he realized that his purpose needed him to be there that day. And getting his PhD had him be there, because if he wasn't getting his PhD, he would not have been in that place in that moment. He is now the head of behavioral science for West Point. Okay, so it all turned out. But purpose is beautiful, because it will help you step into the things you need to that you don't know why you're doing them. So that was, in some way, his hard right was the career choice he made. Yeah. Okay. It had other interesting implications as well. So we all, you know, for me, when I sit and listen to people about their stories about what his purpose done for them, they're always in awe of how it put them in situations they would never put themselves in. And because they were there, their unique gift got to have an impact that they would never have seen otherwise. That's the beauty of listening to what your purpose is.
So powerful. And you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Leading from Purpose, Clarity and the Confidence to Act When It Matters Most. It is an incredible book. And I just want to highlight here real quick, Nick, before we continue on. Throughout his chapters that he writes, Nick, at the end, you have points to ponder. And I love that. And they're not just your average question that's like, oh, you know, what would you do if? You really write thought-provoking questions for the reader to dive even deeper.
Absolutely. So, I mean, in some sense, if we just take the chapter we were just talking about, hard right versus easy wrong, which I think is one. You know, when in the past have you chosen the easy wrong as opposed to the hard right? What do you wish you had done differently? What is the easy wrong others would like you to make? When in the past did you do the hard right, and what was the impact over time? Did you know it was the hard right? So in some ways, there's just a lot of very important questions for each of us to look at across these chapters. And the way I wrote the book was, I mean, I've had the gift of taking people through programs where we spend 2 or 3 days and they work in groups and they really go through this journey of looking at these things and looking at their purpose and looking at these questions. And so I wrote the book to be able to, as much as possible, capture some of that magic and to give us a chance, for those who wish to really step back and think as they read these things as to what is the real narrative, what is the real story that I need to hear about myself? Mm-hmm. And I think that the challenge we have in the world we live in today is that most of us are so focused on chasing the next bone that we never stop to look at what is the thread that goes through all of this. Yes. That is the key to who we are. And so when I do the chapter on purpose, there's a poem by William Stafford that I do. And if you give me permission, I'll actually do it.
Sure. Okay?
So it goes, the way it is, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. It's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So in some ways, my real desire with this book and with this work that I'm doing is for each of us to know what is that thread that we can't let go of. That if we hold on to, it will take us through things. Now, in some sense, there's a journey to go on in the book of looking at your early childhood magical moments, looking at the crucibles who have tested you, and hearing some other stories in the book of some people who have had some really challenging things, looking at some of the passions that we've had, and being able to start to say, well, see what would the thread, what is the thread through all this that has always been there? I had a woman yesterday I worked with. We were working on her purpose, and she'd been in one of our programs, and she wasn't satisfied with what she'd come up with. So she said, I got to go deeper. We have to really work this thing. And so we came up with her. She had a nice sort of HR-friendly purpose, okay, before. And I always say to people, you know, if it has all the right HR phrases in it, it's not your purpose, right? Everybody always laughs. All the HR people are like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Right. So we came up with her purpose. Her purpose is to take my crew of irreverent pirates on a journey of deep discovery. Now, her father was in the Navy, and her view is that she wants to be a pirate in the Navy. She doesn't want to be in the Navy, and she wants to take her group and do things that are outside the normal boundaries. Now, she happens to be in a business where she's got to do those things. And this whole sort of metaphor made so much sense to her. Now, it came out of her childhood because her father was in the Navy, so she had this whole relationship to the sea that somehow had to get into this metaphor. So it brought the little girl in her into the story. So for me, our purposes have to bring the little girl or boy inside of us into the picture. If that part of us shows up, then purpose is in the room. And if it doesn't show up, it's something else. It may be vision, it may be mission, but it is not purpose. Purpose is the curious little kid in us going, okay, I get to be in the front seat of the car. I'm no longer in the trunk for safekeeping. And oh my God, you just wait till you see what we're going to do now. That's purpose. Hmm. Okay. So it is, you know, as much as it looks serious from the outside, purpose at its core is that moment of joy when all hell breaks loose and everybody else is screaming and you're like, you know what? This is actually cool. You're like, okay, I feel embarrassed to say this or think about this, but the truth of the matter is this is great, right? Because everybody else is freaking out. That's purpose for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a beauty that this brings to who we are and allows us in those moments when it most matters to be able to know that we're making the hard right choice. And that's what the hope of this work is. Whether you're now, if you're a parent, it gets even more complicated. Yes.
Yes.
So many of the people talking, many people listening, are in the role of being parents. Actually, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you a crazy parent story then?
Please do.
Okay. So, actually, in the book, my girls show up in multiple places in the book because, in some ways, they've been my greatest teacher. So, one of the challenges of purpose is that when you know what your purpose really is, you actually know what the score is, and you know where you're leading from purpose in your life and where you're not. And you really can't sort of act as if you don't know. And I have a lot of people come up to me once they know their purpose and go, I wish you told me. I says, what do you mean? I says, I wish you told me that I now know. I'm like, oh, okay, that conversation. Okay, so what is it? What do you find? What is like, and they go and they say, well, you know, here's what's working, man. Oh, my God. It's like, oh, well, purpose is a devil in the sense that it will keep pushing you to step into the places where you're not living it. So for me, personally, about 5 years ago, I'd been doing this for about 5 years, running around the world, literally teaching this material and having it just be like wildfire. Everything from oil and gas guys in Oklahoma to marketers in London to power tool guys in Australia. It was just amazing, right? I was at the time divorced and a single parent of two girls, 13 and 16, that I co-shared with my ex-wife. Co-adult parented, all those things. But I was never around for all the schlepping, right? I was always traveling. And so I had a particular weekend where I was going to be schlepping the girls around. When they're 13 and 16, as we all know, that you spend your day as a limousine driver, basically. That's all there is, right?
That's right.
It's like, I don't know what version of the adult goes out the window, but for the most part, it's just pick me up and drop me off, Dad. And then you get to have conversations with them while you're in the car that otherwise you probably wouldn't have because they just happen to start talking. So on Saturday night, I'm supposed to pick up the 16-year-old at 11 o'clock from a party. I show up at 10:45. I walk in. I get her. I take her out. We get in the car. What I don't realize is I was supposed to tweet her that I was there. And that she was going to come out, you know, because no parent's supposed to walk in because it's just completely embarrassing. Anyway, so I had done everything wrong that you were supposed to do. So she loses it in the car. Mm-hmm. Okay. Upon which her sister decides to yell and scream at her sister, older sister, because it's just an opportunity for just all hell to break loose. Mm-hmm. And then I start yelling at both of them. Now it gets to the point where it's just so awful. There's no cleanup. It's just. I pull over the side of the road and say, okay, I'm going to go, I'll take you back to your stupid party. Of course, you know, at this point, it doesn't make sense. And then they're both upset at me for being so childish. And I'm like, okay, nobody's winning anything here. It's just one of those awful moments as a parent where no matter what you do at this point, you can't undo just the what just happened. Go home. Next day, they sit down and they say, look, we talked about it and Dad, we don't want to spend time with you anymore. Now, as a single divorced dad who cherishes his weekends with his girls, that was about as awful of a moment as I could imagine. And, you know, the next thing that happened was as I stepped back and I said, if I'd been living my purpose in this particular situation, what would have been different? And there was a long list of things that would have been different. See, I was doing a great job of living my purpose in the work I did. And I had somehow thought that I could be on vacation at home. And the truth of the matter was that the place I needed to most be doing this was with my girls. Now, I would love to say to you that it immediately, with purpose, I transformed and it all became better in about a day or so. It didn't. It took me about 3 years of hard work with those two girls to get it back to that place of having them feel safe and at home. Now, my purpose is to wake you up and have you finally be home. That becomes more poignant based on the story I just told you. So I really feel that the good news is that purpose really pushed me to go do the hard work with those two girls. The oldest one had her best friend die at 14 in front of her, who crossed the street the wrong way. And so she was she had been in therapy and counseling for a number of years as a result of that. So I had to sit down and work with her therapist, and we had to work through our relationship. The younger one had some counseling support that we did as well. And, you know, I had to rejigger my schedule. I had to really think about when was it good for me to be with the girls. Being with them the day I got home, being jet lagged, was probably not the best. And how to set this up, I would say the 13-year-old who's now 19, I got back 100%. And I'm just now starting to get the older one who's now 22 to the place that I would feel is an expression, a fullest expression of my purpose. Mm-hmm. So it has been the hardest place to slog. Now, what I discovered when I started to go back to the office and tell them what happened and what I was working on, they all looked at me and they said, you know, you're not exactly an angel in the office either. So it was like opening up Pandora's box, but it was from the place of having purpose there to kick my butt and hold me at the same time. And I don't know anything else that can do both of those as well. So that's, I think, one of my opportunities and one of my gifts for anybody listening in is that, you know, when you work on this, when you work on it in one part of your life, it impacts the other parts as well.
That's beyond powerful, Nick, because right now you have just shut everybody up. You have shocked them because you just said it's not about work-life balance. Your purpose is thread through your entire being. What you do inside and outside of work, what you do within your family life, it is all interconnected and intertwined.
Yeah, because, you know, in some ways, if you think about it, look, we have we have different strategies by which we express our purpose, whether we're being a parent or we're at work and leading an organization or being an expert or whatever the case may be. We have different ways of expressing it. That uniqueness that we are has different expressions, but it is still our purpose and how we bring it. We can have many causes in our life. We can have many loves in our life, but we have only one purpose. Now, some people say, well, what does your purpose statement change over time? And I says, yes, you can change the words, but that room that is the purpose that is yours, that beautiful, unique gift that you are, in its fullest expression, it never changes. You can change the key that you use to access it. And I've played with my words and changed them and modified them over the last 10 years a number of times. But it is the same. It is the same room. Okay. And it is the same thing that people feel and are touched by. But the key is different. It's just like a key to a room or a hotel room. You know, it's the hotel room itself that counts. The key is what's the access to it. So whatever words that we use for our purpose are an access to that beautiful expression. That's why the three ways of accessing purpose are so important, is that your early childhood magical moments or your passions or your most challenging life experiences, they have such deep neural connections that are fired when we connect to those experiences, that having a purpose statement that is connected to those, it expresses that uniqueness, fires off millions of neural connections that help us step into that place in which we feel like we're in solid ground. And that's, I think, the challenge for all of us.
Indeed. What would you tell someone who's going, oh my gosh, I'm eating this up? Besides, they have to pick up their own copy of Leading From Purpose, Clarity and the Confidence to Act When It Matters Most. I don't care if you're a parent and you're a stay-at-home parent and you don't work an outside job, you need this book. Everybody can pick up this book and glean something from it. I know I have. I've already marked it up, and I'm going back, and I'm even going to have my older children read it too. I think it goes beyond just words on a page. I really believe we need to connect the heart and the mind, and you do a wonderful you just have a way of doing that within your book.
Well, thank you very much. I worked really hard to get there. And just a funny story. You know, I didn't learn how to do all this stuff working with people who were saving the world. I got to do this with people like all of us on the call who have potentially kids that we're dealing with. There's what we would like them to do and there's what they're doing. There's customers that are not acting the way we'd like them, strategies that fall apart. There's people that we hire who think are great and then they turn out not to be and we have to figure out what to do. There's other people that have been looked over who deserve a little extra help. And all of these are sort of the normal things that we deal with in life. And I think that purpose is most applicable in all of those basic places. You don't have to change your job, get new kids or any of those things to have a fabulous experience of stepping into your purpose. And I was running a program once and I said to this guy, so what do you do? He says, I'm in charge of Jiffy peanut butter. And I'm like, really? You're the Jiffy peanut butter guy? He says, yeah, pretty much. And I'm like, so, you know, there's a part of me and a part of both of us that laughed and said, you know, he said, I'm not going to do, you know, this, I make peanut butter. I says, well, you know, you, as much as everyone else, deserves to know what your purpose is. And I said, look, let me tell you a story. one of my favorite magical moments as a kid is the peanut butter and jelly sandwich I had, which is the first one I had, the extra crunchy Jif peanut butter. I still remember it. I still remember the smell of it, the taste of it, where I was, who I was with, and everything. I said, there's a lot of people who have magical moments from their childhood that has your peanut butter in it. So I don't think you can discount the value and the benefit of living your purpose. So I don't think, you know, I think the beauty of purpose is that it doesn't judge what we do as much as it calls us to bring our fullest gift to whatever it is. Mm. And that's so much, you know, what do people remember isn't all the sexy stuff. What they remember is how you touch them.
And that touch is so important. You know, we can go into our social media, our Instagram stories and our Facebook feeds, and we can look at things, but we've lost the touch, that human interaction that we were all created to have. I mean, relationship is it.
Absolutely. In some ways, until you have fully the relationship with yourself and with your purpose, it's unclear to me whether you fully have the relationship that you could have with everyone else. Mm. So this is about going in to go out. And most of the time I'm dealing with people who are, many of them are executives and they've made it to the top, but they all wonder when someone's gonna find out that they actually aren't supposed to be there. They all have the imposter syndrome going on. Mm-hmm. When I was doing work at West Point, there was like 50 faculty in the room. And these are people who had just done amazing things in the world, jumped out of airplanes and everything else. And almost to a person, they all felt like everyone else deserved to be at West Point, but they didn't deserve to be there. There had been a mistake and they'd been let in. And I think for so many of us, we have that experience of ourselves. But I think the power of purpose is for us to finally own the room and the space that is ours, that if we step into that place, we are always home. And we always belong, and we are always able to give our gift to whatever context it happens to be, whether it is working for an Arby's flipping burgers or happening to be sitting at the UN. It doesn't make any difference. Okay, purpose is something that will be with us no matter what we do in our life.
What would you tell someone saying that, okay, I get this, I'm messed up, I need a purpose, I need to find that thread? What would be just their first initial step, besides buying your book, of course, and working through those questions and all? Because in your book at the very beginning, I don't know if it's chapters 3s and 4s, but that first section, you talk about, you know, how you can access your purpose by, like you mentioned before, magical moments in childhood, the crucible stories, and finding purpose through passion. But what would be one way just to start off, you know, if they're driving or they're running and they want to kind of like, okay, I want to think about this purpose thing?
So I think here's the fun part. Everybody focuses on trying to get the words figured out, but that's not purpose really. It's an access point. The beautiful thing is to think back about what are your magical moments when you were a kid. And not to say, well, you know, I loved playing with Barbies. I want to know what Barbie was wearing, what you were feeding her, who else was there, and what happened next. If, on the other hand, you liked blowing things up, I want to know what you blew up. Did you still have any hair afterwards? What did you do after that? What did your parents think? What did it smell like? And whatever other adventures you were on, I want the movie. And in some ways, whenever I have people step into the movie of either their magical childhood moments or a deep passion they have, or really thinking about what did they do to get them through the most challenging moments in their life, that, and who are they now that they wouldn't have been otherwise, and they start thinking about all those stories, it is impossible not to step into purpose. And what's important is being in it, not having a cute phrase. Okay? The phrase is nice, but the stepping into purpose is more important. And it's in those stories that we find it.
Mm. All right, start writing, people. We got to get those stories out on paper so we can see this thread.
Exactly.
It's so great. You're going to want to pick up your own copy of Leading from Purpose, Clarity and the Confidence to Act When It Matters Most. Well, in life, we all want to be happy. And I know you believe that it's not just about this thread, but purpose creates impact. Where does purpose and happiness collide?
It's an interesting question. So here's the thing. I feel like if I give you everyone on this call Ben and Jerry's and a nice ball of wine or a beer or whatever the case may be, we can create instant happiness for everyone. Okay. Now, unfortunately, there's also this thing called the hangover or the sugar hangover, or all the other things that come with after we've done all these things, sort of there's the price to be paid. So happiness is something that happens in the moment. Now, the research does show that people who have a sense of purpose have more of a sense of happiness, but even more than that, they have a much deeper sense of fulfillment. So purpose actually will have you delay momentary happiness for things that are of meaning and fulfillment, and to go for those things as opposed to the in-moment happiness. So in some sense, Aristotle talks about this, the eudaimonistic, which is basically momentary happiness, and the other side of happiness and the other version of it, which is about purpose, and is really about fulfillment over time, is the deeper form of happiness. And I think that's what I'm looking for, is helping us all step into that over time ability to feel like it really was deeply fulfilling. And there's a sense of joy of what is it we were able to do because we stayed on the course that was the one that we were supposed to stay on. So that's in some sense how I play with this conversation about happiness. And at the same time, I enjoy a glass of wine. I enjoy all those things. But doing it in the context of purpose has it feel different.
That's powerful. Well, you interviewed and talked to over 75 people. What was one of your, okay, I don't want to say favorite stories, but what was one that really stood out to you and touched you personally?
Joy, it's like there's so many different stories, and to think about which one touched me. I would say a particular story that touched me personally, and I think it gets to some of what we were just talking about. I had a woman, Prerna Issa, who was working for a company in Europe. She'd done our programs, and her purpose was about basically lifting, helping women step into their true dignity and make a difference in the world. And she had two job offers. She had one, which was to go work for a company where she'd spend her time going to all the wonderful restaurants around Europe, and it would be, she was the head of HR, and it would just be pretty much a glamour experience from one thing to the other. Going to work for the World Food Program, dealing with refugees and going to the worst places on the planet. And we sat down and she said, which of these should I take? I said, well, if your purpose was to answer that question, what would it say? Well, 80% of refugees are women. So she went to work as head of HR for the World Food Program. And for 5 years, she went on that journey. And she got a significant increase in the number of women that worked there, as well as dealing with everything from Syria to Ebola to a whole set of events that were more than most systems have ever dealt with before. But toward the end, and this is the one that really touched me the most, is that her back started killing her, and she realized that following this thing and not living her purpose with herself, but living it with everybody else, was going to kill her. One of the hardest things for all of us is to how to apply our purpose to ourselves. We tend to want to apply it to everybody else. It's easy to see what its impact is. And in her case, the one woman that she was leaving out of the equation was herself. And when she finally acknowledged that and started to change what she was doing and how she was doing it, she had two young kids. She was living in a city separate from where her husband was because of his existing job. And she was traveling to Ethiopia, Niger, Somalia, Sudan. I mean, incredibly intense places where you couldn't take her kids. And basically, how did she put her life back together? And she took her about 18 months to figure this out. She changed jobs. She's still working at the World Food Program, but she's now working with corporations on how to leverage their technology and resources to help deal with the underlying issues that create refugees in the first place. And she's her back issues completely went away, and she found the place that she needed to be in to both apply her purpose to the world, but also to herself. And for me, that was the most poignant because it's the one that I've had the hardest time with myself as well. So, I've learned in interviewing everyone and going on this journey, I've learned as much about what I need to do as my next step as I have anything else I've done. And I think I would say to everybody listening is I hope that I don't sound like I've got it all figured out. I am on the journey along with everyone who's listening. Every day for me is a new opportunity to see what does it mean to lead for purpose in that day and to learn where is it I am and where is it that I need to step more fully into it. And I learn so much from everybody that I go on this journey with. And I also think that it is very difficult to go on it by yourself. So reading the book is great, but reading the book with a couple of other people and going on the journey together is even better as far as how do you step into this and stay in it. So that's, I think, where I was most impacted and one of the stories that really touched me the most.
Mm. How would you describe what it feels like, since obviously you teach this, you are living it, you are on that journey, what does it feel like when you're kind of, I don't know, off-settled and you're not really walking in your purpose? How do you step back in to your purpose, going back into that room?
For most of you who haven't read the book or done this work, I think the best way to get back in it is to just go back into one of those magical childhood moments or one of those passions that we have and just think about what is it like to be in those situations, because it's got a rich tapestry of resources to help us access it. For me personally, my purpose is to wake you up and have you be home. Is I will ask the question of, so what would it look like if I was really home right now? What is it I need to do to create that for those around me? And purpose usually has a wonderfully, brutally clear answer for me. But what's funny is that, I have two ways of saying my purpose. I had a participant came up to me about 3 years ago and they said, "No, that is not your purpose. Let me tell you what your purpose is." And it turns out it goes back to when I was a teenager, the book that I lived in, because I was too nerdy to do anything with girls or anything, was I lived in The Lord of the Rings. Okay? I lived in that book. I read it probably about 10 times when I was a teenager. She says, "You are Gandalf. And you know what you do is you knock on all our doors." Just like at the beginning of Lord of the Rings, when Frodo opens that door. I mean, the minute he opens that door, I mean, it's over. The whole thing is like, his life's never going to be the same. And oh my God, and it's like this journey and all this amazing stuff happens. So your purpose is to be the Gandalf that knocks on our door. And if we open that door, the deeper truth will change us forever. And I sort of said, yep, that is so much a better wording than the one I came up with. And I laughed so hard. And whenever I really am stuck, I will use that phrase, and I'll go, if I was Gandalf, and what's the deeper truth I need to see here? And I'm like, oh man, there's a deeper truth. Oh, okay, that's what I need to see. So I say this to everyone to say that you can play with the words. The truth is, it's the same room for me, and it's a question of how do I access it. And the gift of what this person said to me when they just used that metaphor, which is, I mean, I literally just fell off my chair. But it's, it's great to have something that pulls you into that curious little kid part of us. You know, it's impossible for me to think of Gandalf in that moment, and that sort of in the movie, without sort of going, oh man, okay, now I got to think about this. So that's a version for me of what I do.
That's very powerful, Nick. And I hope people really understand the power of purpose, the beauty of it, and how it can create impact that's long-lasting. I mean, people think, oh, well, you know, you wrote about it in your book, The Eulogy. You know, start from there. What do you want to be remembered for when you're long gone? Let's think about your living legacy right now. What you have, this purpose that you have that's intertwined within you that you can do no matter if you're in a job that you hate or in a job that you love, if you're, you know, you've got tons of kids hanging all over you and spitting up, you can still live out your purpose.
Exactly.
Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you after they pick up your book, Leading from Purpose, Clarity and the Confidence to Act When It Matters Most. Where can they find you?
Where they can find me, if they want to find me on the internet, is www.coreleader.com, coreleader.com. And you can find me there. For the month of June, the book will be in the front table of every Barnes & Noble, and it will be in every airport bookstore as well. So you can pick up the books there, as well as Amazon and all your other access points. So, yeah.
Well, fabulous. We will have all that information for you so you can pick up your own copy in our show notes. There's something about the gift of purpose. And our series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
What has my story gifted me? Yeah, well, my story has gifted me, in some sense, is truly having purpose be the thing that I'm here to bring fully to people. I mean, in some ways, if you look at what I do for a living, it's kind of like, it wasn't like there was any company that was ever going to hire me to do this. Like, oh, we'll hire you full time to do this. It's like, that's not going to happen. So I had to, you know, I had to truly listen to what was the story telling me as to what I needed to do and what my true unique gift was that I was supposed to bring to this world this time around. It has resulted in this, the book is a wonderful expression of it, but it resulted in this work and being able to actually talk about this in a way that I would never have expected otherwise. But when I was a teenager, I remember walking into a bookstore, and everything was awful in my life. My parents were arguing. We lived in a basement apartment, and we lived in Charleston, South Carolina, and I was in the worst school system, and it was just, I mean, I had every right to be a victim. And I remember before there was a self-help section in the bookstore, pulling these books off the shelf, and it was about levitating monks and Gandhi and Roosevelt and Lincoln. And I started reading these, and in them they had their story of their journey as a kid. And I realized that mine was nowhere near as bad as any of theirs. And the human possibility of who we are is so amazing. And I remember at that moment, I was probably 14 or 15, making the choice that I was going to, my life is about the possibility of who we can be. And in some ways, that hasn't changed, right? And one of the reasons we, you and I, are having this conversation is that we're both, I think, committed to that. So that's what my story has helped me see.
Oh, well, it's a beautiful story, Nick. And I'm so glad that you actually put pen to paper. I've got to tell everybody who's listening, Brené Brown writes your foreword, and I'm not going to read anything of it. That in itself is just like, whoa, okay. I took to it. I read everything, including the acknowledgments. So I got to the very bottom part that said that you thanked me too. So I appreciate that. But Brené Brown, pick up this book. It's just incredible what Nick puts together. Your life will be changed. And if you think you do already know your purpose, I want to give you a challenge. I want you to challenge yourself. Do the work in this book and see if your purpose that you think is right now adds up. He has a self-assessment. Take it before and take it at the end. I cannot wait to do mine too.
That's great. Thank you. And I'll also say much of the book is about the journey of living your purpose over time. And just a small piece of it is about figuring out what it is. So for those of you who have a sense of purpose, it's about digging deeper. But I will leave you with, when Brené did the forward, she says, I'm not going to do a normal forward. I said, okay, Brené. She says, I want to do a warning label. I said, great, go for it. So here's the warning label. Caution. This is a book about purpose. Do this work, and it will change the way you live, love, parent, and lead. However, you will not be able to forget, block, or unlearn your purpose. And trying to walk away from the reason you're here on the earth may cause anxiety, resentment, confusion, self-doubt, and persistent low-grade feelings of what I want to do. Once you live your purpose, you can't unlive it. So there we go.
Well, we don't want to unlive our purpose. It is a thread that intertwines us, and it's a gift that we can give all of those that we come in contact with, the world that we touch. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick. I look forward to having you back on.
Thank you very much.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.